This is Life to Listen.
Want to see the world from a totally different perspective?
Ready for provocative conversation?
Intriguing stories?
And inspiration?
Then don't touch that dial.
Welcome
to Talk with Francesca.
She'll give you something to talk about all week long.
Now, here's Francesca.
What if you took the time to really soak it?
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Talk with Francesca. I'm Francesca Bastarash, and you're listening to AM 1510, WWZN, Revolution, Boston. I hope you're enjoying this awesome holiday weekend. If you have any questions or comments and you want to join in on the conversation, send me an email at host@talkwithfrancesca.com. You can also find me on Facebook. You can look me up on Twitter. My website is talkwithfrancesca.com. I love all your emails. I read them all. So please continue to tell me what's on your mind. I will answer yours.
Exits are universal, whether it be leaving a job, ending a relationship, or saying your last goodbye as someone close passes on. Endings can be life-altering. Whether they be prolonged farewells, swift goodbyes, or an abrupt ending, we want to hear from you. So tell us about a memorable ending in your life by emailing us at host@talkwithfrancesca.com. And now, live, loud, and local, Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot is joining me in the studio. Sarah is a MacArthur Prize-winning sociologist, is the Emily Hargroves Fisher Professor of Education at Harvard University, and she is the author of 10 books. In 1993, she was awarded Harvard's George Ledley Prize for research that makes the, quote, most valuable contribution to science, unquote, and is to the benefit of mankind. She is the recipient of 28 honorary degrees and is the first African-American woman in Harvard's history to have an endowed professorship named in her honor. That was a lot to read. Today, we're going to be discussing her book, Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. Oh, when I heard that, I just went, oh, great. I love it.
Title. It is a title that sends kind of shivers through your back.
It really does. Yeah. Sarah, thank you. It's so nice to have you here. Thanks for taking the trip to the studio.
Glad to be here.
Sarah, what finally provokes the I am no longer unclear, I'm done, this is it, that leap of faith that says I'm not going back?
Right. Well, it's interesting because everyone's story of exit in this book has two different kinds of views of exit. The first is just the one that you said. That is the immediate bold sign that says all the sensations are coming together, all the forces are coming together until we almost feel as if we have no choice. We must leave. We must leave. I'm out of here. So all of the obfuscation, all of the chaos, all of the kind of rationalizing goes away, and we know clearly it's time. But the other part that everyone talks about is if you look at that moment in retrospect that where you announced, I'm out of here, you realize that you've been leaving a long time.
A long time.
Right? That
yes,
there are
absolutely
these kind of blurred signs all along the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's a kind of a messy process is the way it's described. An iterative process.
Messy is probably a good word. Yeah. I remember many, many, many moons ago. I'll date myself. But I remember I was on the phone with a friend and I remember where I was, what I was wearing. I said, that's it. I'm done. I was in a relationship I wanted to get out of. And she said, no, you're not at that point yet. Like she actually understood that there was something that I would show in my face or my body or whatever that she would know I am done. And I wasn't done, but almost.
Yes.
I was almost done. But it was so funny the way she said it. No, not quite yet.
You were sending
out early
signals.
It was like, was there
going
to be a bell? Ding, ding. You're done. You're right.
Right.
So how does that happen, though? I mean, because I can think of many times when I've been done. And how do you really know? I mean,
what's really extraordinary about it is that everyone who talks about that moment can absolutely vividly recall it. They can recall what they were wearing, who they were with, how they said it, what their heartbeat was. You feel it almost in your body. It's way
really
beyond
embodying the whole.
Yeah, it's way beyond cognition. It's way beyond sort of your mind making a rational decision.
Mm-hmm.
It's emotion. And its relationship and its body and its everything coming together that finally sort of says, I'm out of here.
But it's interesting because so often there's guilt and remorse in that liberation.
Yes.
Right?
There is, because one of the points I make in this book is that we are a society that is so preoccupied, so celebratory of, so invested in beginnings. launchings, embarkings. What's next for you? That's the question that parents ask. That's the question that we ask our children.
The goals. Right? Where will you be in 5 years, 10 years, 3 months, whatever?
We're always tilting forward. We're always poised for the next opportunity. And in that process, we often neglect our exits, right? They become invisible to us. As a matter of fact, we often think of them as the negative spaces in our life journeys, as moments of retreat or even failure. So even if we are liberated by this moment when we say we're out of here, we also experience this other feeling of guilt
or
failure. Yeah. Failure.
Not right? just in our own eyes, but often how are other people viewing this leaving?
This moment, right. And the other part is that all of exits have this sort of paradoxical sensation of loss and liberation. Because if you are leaving, you are losing something. I mean, there is some way in which leaving, you're leaving something behind. And there is a loss in it, even at the same time as you may experience freedom, exhilaration, relief.
But there's good leaving, celebrations, college, graduating from college, mm-hmm. graduating from high school. Those are positive exits.
And right. But you're also leaving friends. You're leaving a particular context and environment where you may have been happy. You may have been a star going on to someplace else where you no longer
bigger
will
and better.
Be. Yeah. You will no longer be a star. You're leaving a place of comfort and familiarity. Right. So there is that sort of sense of loss, even though you're just dying to get out of there.
Dying is a good word, isn't
yes.
it, though?
Yes.
But that is the way we think about it, that mm-hmm. we're dying off from whatever we're leaving. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Well, it's interesting that a part of you, I think we think of as sort of dying, but mm-hmm. it's also the opportunity to be reborn. That's for sure.
But why is it messy?
Well, I think all life developmental phases and experiences have this messy quality to them. I talk about the work of Erik Erikson, a very important developmental psychologist, who 50 years ago traced the life course by looking at 8 stages in our life journeys. At each of those stages, there is this tension between going forward or staying back, progression and regression. And in that moment of struggling with, dare I move to the next step or do I need to stay here and be comfortable? There is this tension. In order to grow, in order to develop, we have to exit.
It's interesting. When I was reading your book, it was very soothing to know mm-hmm. that when I think of times that I was going to exit, whatever it was, whether it be a job or a relationship, that there was all that angst going back and forth.
Yes.
Just in my mind, it felt like it was more so than maybe other people have experienced.
Yeah.
And so it was soothing to read that and say, oh, other people go through that too, that angst, that constant going back and forth, that confusion, that, you know, uncertainty, that gnawing in your stomach.
Well, we have, part of the reason is that when we exit, we realize that we have been committed to something, whether it was a job, whether it was an identity, whether it was a country of origin, whether it was a relationship. These have been places, whether it was the priesthood, all, you know, that we have spent a lot of years, a lot of energy, a lot of commitment in that space and with those people. And so to leave is very, very hard. It would feel weird if it wasn't hard.
Well, when you say identity, but, you know, so often, you know, when I sold my business, I felt there was a piece of me that was missing, like I had sold my identity.
Yes.
And there were so many people said to me, no, your business isn't who you are. You are who you are.
Yes.
So really.
Yeah, but our work, one of the reasons work is so important is that it helps to define who we are. It's not all of who we are, but it's a very important part of our dimension of our identity. One of the people I talk about in this book is a 58-year-old gay rights activist,
mm-hmm.
right, who talks about exiting the closet to find home and wholeness, right? That's mm-hmm. an identity, making the identity that he kept secret and that was inside of him become public.
Right.
And once he could become public and really join with his community in celebration of his authentic self, that was an exit towards freedom. An exit towards liberation.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Talk with Francesca, and I'm here with Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, who is the author of Exit, The Endings That Set Us Free. All right. Let's talk a little bit about failure, why we feel this sense of failure when we leave.
Well, I think I tried to say a little bit earlier that we are a society that in fact interprets exits often. I mean, our frame on them, mm-hmm. right, is that they are moments of retreat. And I use the term negative spaces in our life journeys rather than positive and propelling spaces in our life journeys, right? And because we are so, when I think about our society, I think about kind of the way we think about success or growth or development, I see a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cultures, you would see a circle, right? That endings and beginnings are in kind of constant and in some often harmonious connection one with the other. But the way we sort of see it, tilting towards the next opportunity, moving up, as we embark, means that when we leave something behind, it's perceived as being failure. And part of the purpose of this book is to bring out the fact that exits can be moments, generative moments, mm-hmm. moments of great reflection, moments that propel us ultimately forward to the next beginning.
Why did you write this book? What was the interest?
I have always been fascinated by exits. My mother used to say, still alive at 97 years old, about her three children, that her favorite view of us was our backs.
Oh.
Watching us move deeper and deeper into the world, watching us leave.
Really?
And when my kids were little, this is now 30 years after my mother said that, I would run to the window and watch them as they were leaving for school to see whether their backs were strong, whether their spines were straight, whether they were going to be able, in this exit from home, to really greet the day that was likely not going to be a perfect day, right? Mm-hmm. It was going to be hard, parts of it at least hard. And then I also come from a family that was very celebratory of and ritualized about leave takings, right?
Really?
Yeah, that it was countercultural, but it wasn't just the beginnings we were celebrating. I remember my father saying, why do they keep on calling these moments when you leave high school or college commencements rather than graduations? Now, mm-hmm. if you were celebrating that moment of leaving high school as a leave-taking celebration, you'd call it graduation.
Mm-hmm.
If you were missing that completely, you'd call it commencement. You'd already be focused on the mm-hmm. beginning of the next thing without having the opportunity to pause, mark it, celebrate it, mm-hmm. You know,
it's interesting. A guy that is more of an acquaintance of my husband and I, and he had a party when he got divorced, and I found
yes.
it really offensive.
Yes.
I remember thinking to myself, what is wrong with him? Why is yeah. he celebrating? This is so sad.
Yeah,
I didn't like it. I felt yeah. very uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was reading your book, I thought, well, you know, I guess that it can be something to celebrate if you're in such a horrible situation, you finally have the courage to leave.
And it may not, I mean, maybe a party, a celebration didn't feel right to you, but it might be that we can find ways of innovating occasions mm-hmm. that mark those moments of pain, of mm-hmm. anguish, of loss, in a way that allows us to move on mm-hmm. more purposefully.
Right.
And I think a lot of us experience divorce as a moment of isolation
right.
rather than what we need at that moment, which is community building.
Right.
And we build communities by finding a way to gather folks together in a kind of a ritual moment.
Yeah, I have a question for you. And when I think oftentimes about a couple getting divorced, many times they remain best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And at the risk of sounding judgmental, I always question that. As mm-hmm. what, you know, why? It seems to me that there's no clearing of the deck to move forward
mm-hmm.
when that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's still such a strong connection. Oftentimes there are children involved. And so what's the difference other than they are now living in different homes, sleeping in different bedrooms? But if they're best friends,
How if they are best friends, it's probably just another phase of their marriage. You know,
and what do you mean by that?
Well, because if they're best friends and this is the person you go to for affection and for guidance and for support, it's probably you're probably not ready to be unmarried. It's just another form of marriage where you're mm-hmm. living in separate houses. Maybe you're sharing parenting in a different way. Mm-hmm. I think some people try their best to be friends.
Yes.
After divorce, mostly for the children. So the children don't feel torn.
Right.
And don't feel as if they have to choose one side or the other and aren't in the middle of a kind of a battle mm-hmm. between parents.
But I'm thinking about an incomplete goodbye. Mm-hmm. You know, how does that affect us? I mean, can we really move to the next level if something is unfinished?
That's a lovely question. And I think that partly endings are beautiful because they are complete and when they are complete.
And, right? when is the key word, isn't it? Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, yes.
Yes, when we mark it.
Yes.
There's a wonderful, wonderful sociologist named W.E.B. Du Bois who wrote a beautiful essay called On Beauty and Death. And what he's saying is that we know beauty by its ending, right? Because it is complete. Ugliness, he says, streams on and on and on, infinitesimal. You know, there is no ending mm-hmm. to ugliness. But beauty requires an ending. And part of the reason that this book is so precious, it seems to me, is to make that point of how exits can be beautiful moments.
And there's something about small goodbyes that you say are mm-hmm. very, very important. Mm-hmm. And I think I learned a very valuable, although difficult, lesson in many years ago. I had a friend and we were traveling and I don't even remember what the tiff was about, but it was a tiff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were okay. You know, we managed. But when we got back from the trip, we became less friends,
yes.
less and less and less. Yes. And then, you know, her life went in one direction, mine went in another. And that was fine. I mean, it wasn't as if there was this horrible thing that we said to one another and then we never spoke again. But we never really at least discussed it. And then mm-hmm. out of the blue, I got a phone call about 10 years ago from an old friend. As it turned out, this particular woman was a secretary in this woman's office and had a major heart attack. Do you remember so-and-so? I said, mm-hmm. of course, yes. You know, I knew her since she was 16 years old, blah, blah, blah. She said, she had a major heart attack. She died.
Yes.
And, mm-hmm. you know, it left me feeling incomplete.
Yes.
I went to the wake and yeah. I saw her sister who had actually graduated with me from high school. And she actually brought up, oh, yeah, she had talked about that argument, that terrible argument the two of you had had in Cancun. And, yeah. you know, so in some ways I say, fortunately, I wasn't that close to her, so it doesn't prey on my mind.
Yeah.
However, it when I was reading your book and you're talking about small goodbyes, it made me think, yes, it is important. To
yes.
have these goodbyes, mm-hmm. Even if, you know, it was just reconnecting a little bit. Oh, you know, it sounds like your life's kind of going in one direction and mine's going, you know, remember that stupid fight we had?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important.
It is very important. And I'm very interested in looking at those moments in our ordinary days, threaded through each day, when we have the opportunity of looking a person in the eye mm-hmm. and giving them our undivided attention, even just for a minute. Or a second, mm-hmm. and saying goodbye, you know?
I'm going to throw a little curveball at you. How do you say goodbye to someone who is in your family mm-hmm. that you haven't been able to have a relationship with? Maybe the family is you know, toxic, dysfunctional, and you know, because, of course, biologically, we all want to be with our families. How does someone like that deal with saying goodbye, or do they ever really say goodbye? It seems oftentimes there's family feuds where sisters and brothers, parents, even they don't speak to their children, and then there's a death. How do they ever?
Well, one of the things that I talk about in this book, in the last chapter, which was on grace, and which talks about a man dying in the midst of his family, I refer to the work of a palliative care doctor who talks about, as most palliative care doctors do, about those moments before death. It could be a couple of months, it could be weeks, when someone in your family is dying, and there could have been a riff that's been there for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And these become moments for reconciliation.
Hopefully.
They can become moments for reconciliation, yes, because the son who has been estranged from his father who is dying doesn't want to see his father pass on without some way of sort of saying, I'm sorry, even if it's just, I'm sorry. And the father doesn't want to either. So what these doctors recognize as they watch these reunions, the storytelling, the imagining, the opportunity for someone bravely reaching out to say, I'm sorry, mm-hmm, right? That these are moments of growth in when someone's declining and dying, there are opportunities for growth,
yes,
and change and development and reunion and reconciliation. And I certainly watched it as I wrote this book. And people report these times of enormous growth, even in the last moments of great decline.
Well, death is not done well.
It isn't, not in our society. It is not. And one of the reasons I was really excited about working on this book and doing the research for it is because I've traveled all over the world where I see other cultures having these wonderful ceremonial moments, not only around death, but around other kinds of exits, even saying goodbye. If you're in St. Petersburg, Russia, and you watch people say goodbye at the train station, it's just an extraordinary, very passionate, very moving, very colorful moment,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah,
just a goodbye to say goodbye on the train. But you don't know when you'll see those folks again,
no,
or if.
Sometimes it's difficult when we are not the ones who say goodbye,
mm-hmm,
when there's the unexpected,
mm-hmm,
do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when there's, you know, the wife comes home and she says to her husband, I don't want to be married anymore after 30 years. He has no idea. I would think that would be a more difficult, that goodbye in general for both of them most likely would be difficult. But
yeah,
it's more difficult, I think, for the person who doesn't have the control. Would you agree with that?
I don't think in that case either of them has control, right?
Well, I don't either, but there's this mindset that,
yeah,
people, you know,
yeah,
well, she was the one who said it, or,
right,
you know,
and
which, of course,
also,
is just ridiculous.
Yeah,
but
it's, when did that goodbye start, you know, and who initiated it? It's impossible to tell. It's become so complex and, mm-hmm, convoluted by that point. I do think that people believe that if they are saying goodbye out of choice rather than being forced to, that, mm-hmm, it tends to be an easier goodbye. On the other hand, the people that I talked to in my own research talked about the fact that even if you choose it, even if,
right,
you say, this is my choice,
yeah,
I'm doing it, just like when you gave up your business, this is my choice, that doesn't mean that the way is easy forward.
That's right.
It doesn't, right, mean that you still won't feel,
right,
the loss and maybe even the devastation.
Right. We have a responsibility to saying goodbye, and I find that people are so often afraid of that authentic conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
I think that that's part of the reason, absolutely.
They avoid the truth, and they don't want to move through the process of what it feels like to let go. And what I...
Or to express your vulnerability. I'm going to miss you, right? That when you're saying goodbye, you say, I'm really going to miss you. And you're making yourself vulnerable to the other person.
Right. But it's a beautiful thing. And that's,
yes,
what really, as you said earlier, it's the completeness of it,
mm-hmm,
isn't it,
mm-hmm,
that makes it more beautiful, and that it frees you. And then it really just, you know, it may sound funny to say this, but it is just sadness. That's,
mm-hmm,
all,
mm-hmm,
isn't it? It,
mm-hmm,
really is. That's what you can really focus on instead of,
yeah,
all this other stuff.
Yes, exactly. And nothing wrong. And of course, sadness is part of life, right?
Mm-hmm. We just have a few minutes left, but I have a couple of questions here this is one. Let's see. Nicole from New Jersey. Saying goodbye is never easy. I think part of the reason that people don't leave relationships is not just fear of the unknown, but that it could be worse. I'm in an abusive relationship. I grew up in an abusive adoptive home. Because I already feel that there must be something wrong with me because my own mother didn't want me, ugh, I don't have the courage to leave. Even though I believe that there must be something better, I just don't seem to have the courage to leave. What possible solution could there be to my situation?
Well, that sounds as if this person needs some
intervention.
Some intervention and some counseling or some therapy, some support from a professional who has worked with folks who have been in abusive relationships, because one of the experiences, obviously, for most folks who have been in abusive relationships is that they can't leave, you know, that there's a way in which they feel attached to the mm-hmm. person who is being abusive. And I think there needs to be a kind of a counseling intervention,
mm-hmm. I
professional support.
Right. Right. I want to talk to you about home. In your book, you write, home is the place where life is most familiar, where we fall into old patterns, where our roles become scripted and predictable, when there is a fine line between the bonds that bind and constrain. It is also the place where we don't live by we live by secret codes and illusions that outsiders, even intimate outsiders, don't understand or appreciate. In her beautiful essay on going home, Joan Didion speaks about the power and the pull of home. How do those that cannot go home because it has been abusive, mm-hmm. you know, so, I mean, it made me think of this when we got this question here, reconcile exiting?
Well, I think that the home, I mean, this woman, I expect, will have to create a new home, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is, that she will have to say, home is not a place where you are abused. It is not a place that feels unsafe. Home is not a place where you are not loved. It is not a place where you are rejected. That's not home. Mm-hmm. Home is a place where you feel familiarity, you feel comfort, you feel love. So you have to, you know, home isn't the literal place here. It isn't the literal family in which you grew up or the literal house in which you had your bedroom. Home has to be a place. And in that chapter, I talk about coming home for this gay rights activist. And I talk about coming home for this Iranian immigrant adolescent boy who's been forced to leave Iran mm-hmm. and find home mm-hmm. many thousands of miles away from what is literally his home.
Thank you, Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, for being here today on Talk with Francesca. Exit: The Endings That Set Us Free is the name of her book. Thanks so much for being here today.
Glad to be here.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next up, what it costs us to end grief too quickly. When it comes to the ending of a relationship, we're often told that we need closure. Just get over it. Well, sociologist Nancy Burns, author of Closure, is going to tell us how this push for closure can be costly. So don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Don't try, sir.